The hunt for a serial killer that spans rural Wisconsin and I guess you'd say the seamy underbelly of Chicago, I think that's compelling enough for me. But when you add in some memorable characters and some crime-solving assistance from Shakespeare's works, well, that makes it a tough book to put down. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. And great to be able to talk with James DeVita. He is a core company member and literary manager at the American Players Theater, a professional classical repertory company in Spring Green, Wisconsin. He's worked extensively as a playwright and has published two novels for young readers, The Silenced and Blue. A native of Long Island, New York, now lives near Spring Green and has a new murder mystery out. It's titled, and it's for adults this time, A Winsome Murder. And James, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
That's great. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Oh, it's wonderful. And I really enjoyed your book.
Well, thank you.
I'm wondering.
What?
Here you are. You're an accomplished actor and director. You've written some children's books now, and. How did you get into murder mysteries?
Why did you do this? Well, as you're saying, the lion's share of my work over the last 25 years in my writing work, at least, has been for young people. I started out. I was a resident playwright at First Stage in Milwaukee for years, where I've written about 16 plays for young audiences. My first book was a middle grade fiction, and then I tried a little older audience. I went to a YA. Serious novel, a young adult novel, and then people say that, you know, how did I get the idea of, you know, try and write the first book too? But I get these odd little urges to do things. But it's a wonderful thing. I'm very lucky because my theater career starts at noon, so I can still write in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been lucky enough to balance these two careers over the years. But really, long story short, this is kind of funny, but my last two books, I was getting a little frustrated with, you know, after they got published. They were published by HarperCollins, big New York publisher, and
yeah.
They both went out of print, and I couldn't get them reprinted again, and we sold out the run, and I was a little frustrated with my career in writing for young audiences. And I say that because it's a funny lead into how I got to write this book. So I was kind of getting a little frustrated, and I wanted to write something new. And I said, I'm going to write for an adult audience. I'll try something completely new. So the idea that eventually came to me, because I was thinking of something like a murder mystery or, you know, could I do that? But I'd never written one before and was not particularly a murder mystery reader. So one of the main characters in the book, as you've read, is a frustrated children's book writer.
Yes.
Who decides to write a murder mystery. She wants to write something adult, you know, maybe some, you know, some sex and some violence and it's something salacious that might have a chance to sell in her mind, since her other books have not done particularly well. So it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing for myself as the writer. Nobody who doesn't know me knows that. But so the one of the main characters in the book is a frustrated children's book writer who wants to be successful. You know, her idea of financial success, and writes this book about a murder that happens in a fictional town called Winsome Bay, Wisconsin, which is near where she lives. And of course, she winds up getting a little more involved in her investigative journalism. She gets a little more involved than she wants to be.
And the protagonist is, and I was trying to think, James, is it Mangan? Is that how you would pronounce it?
Mangan.
You would pronounce it Mangan. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead and describe him.
Yeah. Well, how would you describe him? I want to hear how you would.
Well, he's a tough.
Yeah.
He's a Chicago detective, but he gets these insights from William Shakespeare.
William Shakespeare, yeah. It's fun. I had not, you know, imagined that when I started writing the book. I knew I wanted to have a detective come in from Chicago because one of the murders crosses state lines. And at first glance, Detective Mangan, he looks like pretty much your stock detective that would walk into a murder mystery, you know, middle-aged, tough guy. Kind of got a good heart, but a little damaged, and big, tough Irish cop from New York. And But when he's on the scene, and this happened in the writing of it, you know, in those creative, you know, early morning hours, which I thought I would cut later, but I was writing a scene when the detective came on, one of the crime scenes, and in my imagination, a line from Shakespeare came to me as he was looking at the clues and the victim. And I had no idea what that meant. You know, as the writer, sometimes I just write things and say, okay, that's kind of crazy. I'll cut it tomorrow morning. I believe in fast, loose writing, just gets, mm-hmm. you know, without editing too much at first. Then I went the next day and I was looking at it and I thought about it and I said, well, that's kind of odd, but could that be something about this character? So I started to develop this detective who's a bit of a loner in his life, but and he finds his love and his relief from his job is literature. He loves great works of literature, and his favorite author is William Shakespeare, and his second favorite author is Herman Melville, which happened to be two of my favorite authors. And so I just, you know, I had this wealth of, I've been blessed to be involved in literature, and I've been around classical works for over 30 years now in my business as an actor and a director. So I had this great, you know, treasure trove of memories that I could pull on. So I started to develop, you know, of course I had to develop down for him how he would have this information. Mm-hmm. And it wound up being a thing that when he looks at a crime scene, he's so well-versed in Shakespeare that lines come from plays come to him. And he doesn't even always know, I think, why, how, where that's leading him, but he's come to trust that it means something. So an obscure line from, say, a play like Titus Andronicus will come to him. And then he'll go all home and look it up and try and figure out, why is this coming to me? Why am I hearing this? And in a way, that's a little second mystery. It's a mystery that Mangan deals with. And eventually, these little clues that come to him, along with his forensics and police procedural, they lead him to killers. So if you look at that, so the two main characters, one is a frustrated book writer and one is somebody that has been around Shakespeare all his life. So as they say, write what you know, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And you mentioned Titus, and there was there's one spot in the book where you comment on Titus, or uh-huh. he comments on Titus. Well, how many, I've forgotten this when four, how many is it, 14 murders?
Yeah, it's something I don't have it in front of me. It's something like, you know, there's murders, dismemberments, there's a live burial, there's a beheading.
Rapes.
And there's, you know, and cannibalism and rape. And so when people, I have this line in the book where, you know, some of his, you know, street buddies and other cops, they, you know, kind of tease him about this, you know, this tough guy who loves classical literature. And he's like, have you ever read Shakespeare? He says it's some of the worst crimes imaginable that the man wrote about. And the motives for it, and so be it sexual jealousy or power, or so he uses them to learn about the psychology. I mean, we didn't have the term psychology when Shakespeare was writing, but he was writing psychology. So he uses them like that, and he just tells people, well, if you don't think that Shakespeare deals with murders and the kind of stuff we work on the streets every day, read his plays.
Oh, man. James DeVita, our guest today, who is the author of the book A Winsome Murder Mystery, set in kind of in Wisconsin and mm-hmm. in Chicago.
Yeah.
And with some memorable characters, in particular James Mangan. I you know, the good thing about, well, I can always tell when I'm, you know, at the end when I finish a book and I think back and I thought, God, I hope he writes some more about this. About this
I hope
guy.
I do too. Yeah, he's a great character to get a series out of. If hopefully, knock on wood, if this book is successful, we can get another one out of it.
I would really hope so. And how many references to Shakespeare did you have? Was there 80 or 90 of them or something?
I think there's close to 100. And for those who are interested, we actually have notes at the back.
Yes.
We don't footnote it during the book. That's kind of distracting.
Yeah.
You just see them in italics. And so for the reader that is a word geek like myself who might want to look them up, in the back we have what play it is from, the scene, the act, the character that says it, and if I paraphrased it or not. So we've done that work at the back of the book if somebody wants.
James DeVita, I guess you may want to join in. What do you look for in a good mystery? What kind mm-hmm. of characters are you drawn to? Are there certain settings that you maybe enjoy more than others? When you read a good novel, do you find yourself picturing it on stage or maybe as a movie, I hope you'll join in with your question. Or maybe you have a question about writing itself. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page. And our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. And we'd certainly love to hear from you. I'm wondering, as you know, you're an actor and director, how does that background influence your writing? In terms of—
okay, well, you know, I find them really, really very similar, to be honest with you. It sounds a little crazy, but as I was saying, you know, before, earlier I was saying, I believe in, for myself, at least works for myself. I'm a pretty, I call it writing fat. I write a lot of stuff that winds up getting cut. I write a lot of bad pages, too. I've just gotten more at peace with that as I've gotten older, that not belaboring it for it to be perfect as it's coming on the page. Just to get out what you're feeling in your heart and your imagination, just get it down. And, you know, the next day, is, for me, is the day of editing and relooking and the day after that. But I find rehearsals are much like that. So my first drafts, I really look like they're kind of like my first rehearsals. Because when I first rehearse a play, I'm very general, you know, as opposed to being specific, I'm very general. And I do a lot, make a lot of bad choices. And I try to tell young actors, like, you get a piece with that. The rehearsal is the playground. That's where you try things, and sometimes things work wonderfully, and sometimes they completely fall on their face. It's like, oh, my God, that's terrible acting. And I'll read some things the next day. It was like, oh, my God, who wrote that? You know, that was a 2 o'clock in the morning thought. That was just the next day you look at it, it's melodramatic or it's overwrought. But I do believe, you know, for me, that until you get, you know, maybe get 6 or 7 pages down, and maybe you keep 2 of them, or maybe you keep 1 paragraph, that can change the entire book. But I kind of feel I wouldn't get that 1 paragraph unless I wrote all that other stuff around it, if that makes any
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, no, it really yeah. does. And your work, in terms of character development and dialogue, I would think that your stage work and that...
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think over the years I've found that my stronger suit over the years has been dialogue and revealing character and situation through dialogue. And, you know, the old, you know, if you don't have to, you know, tell us, show us. Show us if you can do it, you know, through action and through dialogue. And over the years, I've worked to get my narrative up to par with the dialogue. But I've always been, and I think that's directly because of, you know, 30 years in theater, is I hear plays well. And I'm a pretty, you know, pretty visual writer, too. I think that comes mm-hmm. from my, you know, from staging and films, you know, growing up in a time of cinema and stuff like that. So I do write very visually also. And I love a good metaphor, which is exactly, you know, of course, that's all images and metaphors. That's all Shakespeare and Melville, once he started reading Shakespeare, is about.
I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick break here for just a second, and then we'll take some calls. You can join in again at 1-800-642-1234. Again, email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. James DeVita, author of A Winsome Murder. It's a wonderful murder mystery. I really enjoyed reading it, and I'm pretty sure you will, too. Questions about his writing or about the book itself, join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And we have Glenn from Santa Cruz, California up first. Glenn, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry.
Thanks. And what's on your mind?
Well, James, I want to say congratulations on completing your book.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I was curious, when you were speaking earlier, you said you're a fan of loose and fast writing.
Yes.
And then you mentioned you come back the next day, take a look at things. You were speaking specifically about the Shakespeare reference. But I'm curious, mm-hmm. could you describe your writing process that allowed you to complete this book? What was your process like?
Well, years ago I started writing early a.m. So as I say, I have a theater career, which I start basically our day starts at noon. So when I'm on a book, when I'm writing and have goals, so I'm up about 5:30. So usually I'm writing by 6 or 6:30 in the morning. and it takes a good half hour to get my, you know, brain going. Mm-hmm. And if I can get a good 3 hours in, I think that's a good day's work, you know. So I'll often write until about 10 o'clock, sometimes a little later if I can. But usually I shoot to try and get some 3 hours of good writing in the morning. And then I kind of leave it sit. And I, as I said, I do write fast and loose. I'm an Anne Lamott absolute fan, if you've ever read her book Bird by Bird, which is a wonderful book on writing and life. And not judging and not editing too much, that, you know, in that first pass. And then I go back the next morning, and I always start from whatever I wrote the day before. And I go through that. And that's when I start doing a little more, you know, more cautious and editing and judging things. And I cut and change a lot. But so it's kind of like a rough draft one morning, then go back and I start there the next morning. And then I go past that, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So you do a sweep back through of a sort of an edit. And then at the end of that, you're back into the fast and loose, and
yeah,
then the
usually,
next day,
yeah,
going back like that.
Yeah, that last edit usually gets me back in the rhythm and the ideas that I was working on the day before. So I use that morning editing process to kind of springboard me in to the more creative stuff that comes after that, and then so on. I kind of keep repeating that.
Oh,
yeah,
that's cool.
I see. And your entire process of starting to completion, how long did you write?
Well, this took me a good, like, 5 years, and I would say that's because I'm not writing full-time, so aspiring authors out there don't, you know, panic that, you know, usually it does not take that long, but I sometimes have to put down a book, too, because I'll go away to do a show, and I actually support my writing career by being an actor, so there's an irony of ironies for you right there. So I, unfortunately, it takes me much longer than if I was writing full-time. And I would love to see that what that is like someday if I ever get a commission ahead, you know, in advance, to turn out a book, you know, in 9, 10 months or a year. But it takes me quite a while because I'm juggling two other jobs.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you for calling in from California.
Yeah, appreciate it very much, Glenn. Thank you. You can join in, too. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Jan in Arena next. Hi, Jan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good to talk to Jim, and good to talk to you too, Larry. Thanks so much for having him on.
Sure.
I'm a huge fan of American Players Theater and a huge fan of Jimmy DeVita's, and I've read his other books for young people and just think they're great. This one I picked up several copies because I knew I'd want one for myself, and I have several friends that I wanted to share the book with. And I just want people to know that even if they're not huge fans of Shakespeare, Melville, whatever, you will still love reading this book because the quotes are wonderful and intriguing. But if you're not a Shakespeare fan, don't shy away from reading it because the murder mystery itself would stand on its own. So I just wanted to say that, and I wanted to say congratulations to Jimmy for finishing it.
Oh.
Thank you, Jan. It's actually a really great point, and I meant to say that, so thank you for saying that.
Thanks, Jan, for calling. Appreciate it. You know, and that's very, very, very true. I mean, what she said is exactly right. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. You know, it's hard. There are so many elements to this book, and it's hard to it's hard to kind of talk. I don't want to give any.
Yeah,
away.
I know it's hard to talk about a mystery, isn't it?
It is kind of hard. I have to tell you though, there's one murder in that book that I thought, oh, I did not see that one coming.
Well, that's good. It's very hard to surprise our, you know, savvy readers today, and I find that both playwriting and film, it's very hard to genuinely surprise. Well, a reader or an audience, and it's wonderful when you can. Though it's so rewarding for the reader.
Oh, it really was rewarding, and of course I can't say a word about it
in an odd way. Yes, do not say anything, Larry.
No, because I'm convinced that there'll be a lot of other people who say, "Oh, I didn't see that coming." But relationships between parents and their kids, especially fathers and daughters.
Yep. Yeah, there's lots of stuff about parents and family and misconceptions about people, both negative and positive misconceptions we have, and people not always being what they seem, which is a huge theme in Shakespeare. Also, I mean, that's things are not what they always appear like. I am not what I am, as Iago says. But Jan made a good point, too. And even, you know, the Shakespeare quotes I use, there's almost none that would be easily recognizable, even by a Shakespeare geek like myself. So when you see him, even somebody like me, I would be familiar with it, but I'd have to find out where that quote was from, because I didn't want it to be a book about with these clever quotations that are very recognizable. So they're meant to be a little bit of the mystery and obscure, and they're not that easily accessible like crimes are and like murders are. So it's another little tiny mystery. So it's
And it really adds a lot. And if you think about it, and this vengeance, I mean, that's always been part of, I mean, that was always Shakespeare, lust for vengeance, you might say.
Retribution and trying to set the world right, and not always for the best intentions behind that. But so Shakespeare is filled with relationships between children and parents. I mean, Romeo and Juliet, you know, is the most easily recognizable, but... Pericles, you know, lost children, parents finding their children that are lost, and so there's. If I do get a series out of this, these works are ripe for kind of plundering ideas.
Oh yeah, I would certainly think for you in the kind of position that you're in, it must be a little tough to. In terms of promotions, of course, in this day and age, you can get on the phone and talk to people, but to go on a book tour, for example, would be difficult for you, I would think.
Oh, it's very hard. Unfortunately, well, not. I mean, I'm so blessed that the book even came out, but we came out at a time just when I get really very, very busy in my job as an actor. So you've got me on my one day off a week. We work 6 days a week in the theater, so Monday is my day off.
Well,
so we try and do everything on that one day, and it's very hard. I went out and I did about 3 or 4 book talks before my season started as an actor, and then I'll pick up again in the fall and winter. So right now, this is wonderful that you can have me on the air. It's very hard to market the book.
Oh, I'm sure it is. You set the book in the and we talked about this a little bit in the beginning, but you set a Winsome Murder in two main locations. We've got a small Wisconsin town and Chicago. What does each location represent for you?
Well, it was great. You know, again, it was something that I could use from my own personal history. I'm from New York originally, so Mangan, Chicago. You know, to me, he's kind of like one of my Irish uncles from New York, is who Mangan is, and the Irish side of my family, God bless them, they're some of the funniest people I've ever known. They're smart and witty and tough at the same time. I've one of my uncles was a detective in New York. Another one was a Marine. So I use that. So it's kind of like I use my New York influence for the Chicago guy. But it's also fun because I came into this small town. I've been in Milwaukee now. Well, I've been out here for 21 years. And it was the differences of coming from a city and coming into a small town. Like, these people did not lock their cars, left their doors open, or left the keys in their car. And I was like shell shocked for a while. It's like, what are you doing? What do you know? And it took a while and then finally relax into this kind of beautiful small town life that I've been able to enjoy for the last 20 years, where you could forget your money in a restaurant and they'll say, yeah, we'll bring it in next time.
Yeah.
It's like New York, they'd have a cop there and say, what are you talking about? You know, where's your money? You're going to be cleaning dishes for the rest of the day. So I love it. And it's fun it's great to kind of, you know, think of it amusingly of things that Detective Mangan coming in from Chicago into this very small town. There's room for some of that in there.
Oh yeah, definitely. So you're in Spring Green. You've been there for 20 years. Is it similar to Winsome Bay?
I wouldn't say it's not so much similar, but I love using local geography because it's in my mind. So visually, when I write, you know, I love to see like a movie in my head with real places. So I use geography in places that I know, the rivers and the mountains or the city of Madison. And then I embellish, of course. I can use, you know, things that are very local to me, and then I can embellish it and make it something larger. I love being able to say, like, Winsome is, you know, 2 hours from Taliesin. You know, and Winsome Bay is, of course, just fictional. I made it up. But for me, it keeps it really kind of active and real in my imagination.
Someone actually wondered and had a question wondering how you came up with the title of the book itself.
Well, you know, it's a long story, but I actually thought of the idea for something like this more than 20 years ago. There's a town called Friendship, Wisconsin.
I know Friendship, yeah.
Yeah.
Adam's and, Friendship, yeah.
Yep. And I was up there doing a show. I was touring Much Ado About Nothing, which is a show that I did a long time ago. We used to tour up there. And I remember one of the stops we had to go, and somebody said, it's just below Friendship. And for some reason, that sounded like a title to me, Just Below Friendship. And I was originally going to call it something like that, and then I kept on around the word friendship, and then I wanted to fictionalize it. And I eventually came up with the idea of Winsome Bay. But that's funny how long an idea for something. I literally, somebody could look that up. It's at least 15 years ago that we did that, and I heard that name of that city.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
We have...
So, things just stay with me for a long time.
Well, why not? Mm-hmm. And why not bring them up? Earl in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Earl. Thanks for calling.
You bet.
Hi, Earl.
Hello, Mr. DeVita. I wanted to say I really appreciate your work at APT. I have for some years, and I also appreciate your cooking talents. I try to make your Sunday gravy recipe at least a couple of times a year.
I'm completely flattered. My other dream career that I missed. I wanted to be a cook, but
my question is: if you read many mysteries, and if so, who some of your favorite mystery writers are?
Well, the funny thing, I was not really a mystery writer up to this, and in the book also, which I actually kind of used that fact too. The one of the main characters, Gillian McClay, who is writing a mystery, has never written a mystery before. So I actually used when I didn't like I literally Jim DeVita. I had to go out and I bought Forensics for Dummies and I bought police procedural books, and so my desk is surrounded with that writing list. And whenever Gillian McClay would get in a jam and not know what to do, which would be the same time as I did Jim DeVita, I would say something like, "And Gillian picked up Forensics for Dummies and she went to chapter blah blah blah." So I actually kind of turned the negative, well, if, for lack of a better word, the negative things, the things that I was lacking, I decided to use in the book. So I wrote a book about a woman, how to write a murder mystery, and actually learned it in the course of that. So I read quite a few mysteries, as collateral research doing this, and I kind of, and the book uses kind of what I would consider a kind of classic, a very classic murder mystery format. And then within that, I sneak in all this other stuff that has to do with literature. And I think as Jan said earlier, on the phone, you can enjoy it on both levels. You can just enjoy just the sheer mystery and the adventure of it. And for those who want to go a little deeper, there's other stuff in there too.
There we go.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks, Earl.
Appreciate the call. You also, there's a lot weaved into this book, but you weave in elements of organized crime and the trafficking of women and girls. Why were those elements?
Well, that came up, I won't go into the book, but one of the victims, and I started creating a life about her. So as the writer, I started asking myself, well, what could she possibly, what could have gotten her to the point of where this event happened to her? And I started creating a life in Chicago, and I do a lot of collateral research. So I started researching things, whether it be prostitution or this or that, which took me on to some of the sex slave stuff, which has happened right in Chicago and in surrounding areas like that. So then I started researching some of the sex slave industry in the United States. And that took me in. So I'm doing both that, literal practical research, and my imagination is getting ideas through that. So that got me into that whole underbelly of Chicago, which, and there's some horrendous research that I did, and it's going on today. Still the sex slaves, particularly from the Baltic regions of the world. So got into that kind of milieu, which was, and of course, unfortunately, that was ripe for ideas in there also.
Well, yeah, and that's certainly adds another dimension to the whole book. And then you, and then a bird even makes its way into the book. Which,
yes, yeah, which is a very. So, and I would say, as you're laughing, because there is some humor in the book. I mean, it certainly does not shy away from the horrendous acts that do happen. I don't think it's gratuitous, but it's certainly graphic in my own way of imagery and metaphor, which I stole from Shakespeare or have learned how to do through much of that work. But there's also quite a deal of wit and humor. I think James Mangan is a very, I think, at least I find him very funny. Yeah. And some of the things, the stuff with the bird and stuff like that is helps to balance it. So, and it's just like doing, you know, I learned that doing, you know, huge Shakespeare tragedies, like, you know, be it Othello or Richard III or the Scottish play. You don't want 3 hours of just tragedy. You need to, you know, so I know in my work as an actor, it's you look for the comedy and the tragedy and always look for the serious stuff in the comedies. So just as a storyteller, to give your audience variety and also to keep them off their balance.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And one of the things I enjoyed about your book a lot is just sort of the sharp dialogue that exists. I mean, smart dialogue that exists.
Uh-huh.
Cops are, I mean, some of the better mystery writers, I think the cops, the writers, the writing, the dialogue between cops, I mean, these people are generally very smart people.
So detectives. You can sometimes get lost because there's so much jargon. So I tried to be careful of not using too much jargon that would lose an audience. But I wanted to write to, as his partner, James' partner, which is Frank Cusimano.
Yeah.
I grew up in an Italian-Irish neighborhood in Long Island, so we got these great, great, vivid Italian names, you know, Vecchioni and Passalacqua and La Canada. And this guy's called Cusimano, and we call him Cus in the book.
Yeah.
But I did want to write, too, because there's street smart, too, which is not just...
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, there's a wit to the street.
Yeah. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. And the interplay between those two is great in your book.
Yeah.
Tom in Madison is up with a question. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, hi. Thank you for letting me talk. So I'm gonna.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, James. I have not read any of your stuff, but I got to start off by saying yes. My mother's side was Irish, and I was actually married in England to a Brit and lived in Paris. So I know and love Shakespeare. And I've been to the American Players, so I've probably seen you. But you know, I live as an artist. I don't want to say any more, but I do other arts. And some people for years, 10, 12 years ago, said you should really write a book, and it would be based out of Milwaukee and Madison, where my family has lived. I was born in Boston, but I don't know how to. I've started writing it. I've got the whole thing outlined. I don't know where to go because this is a new art for me. I've written songs for 25 years, so I know how to, you know, express things, but. I was just wondering if I could. Do you have an email site? Because I don't really want to.
And ideas about that? I mean,
I could give you my email, and you could see what I do and who I am, and maybe just say.
I have a website, jamesdevita.com. You can contact me through that.
Oh, what is it?
You know, jamesdevita.com.
And Devita is DEVITA.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't.
But you're talking to a guy. You know, I'm. Not very exciting. When I wrote my first book, I went to the library and I got a book about how do you submit your first book. And I did everything it told me to do. I worked on the cover, you know, the cover letter. I did the sample chapters and I started sending out to all the, you know, you need to vet the publishing companies, the ones that you think might suit your book. And then I sent out dozens and dozens, literally. And So I love libraries at the time. You know, we can do everything on the internet now, but I still love my libraries. They taught me how to do everything. And then when my book wasn't getting published, I went to the library and I got a book on what to do when your book is not getting published.
Yeah.
And it basically said, stop worrying about that and write another book. And so there's no right way to do it, you know, particularly for people like myself, too, who are unknown, do not have an agent, so somebody's not just going to look at my stuff that I put across them. I've more chance of that now because I've got, this is my third book published. But yes, I mean, contact me through email, and if I can give you any advice that's useful, I would be happy to.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're outlining, I've talked to so many writers, and you are outlining what about 85% of them have told me.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. How they got started. And we'll put your website. I don't know if we have. We may not have your website up on our Facebook page, but I'll certainly put it up. Cheyenne will put it up right now, actually, so that people know where to get the book. And of course, the book is available anywhere. I would.
Yeah, you can any of your indie bookstores. You can order through there, or just request it anywhere. You know, they can order it for you. And my website is actually an old one. I'm having a new one made as we speak.
Oh, wonderful.
The book's featured on it, but my old website still has my contact info, so if anybody wants to contact me, they can through there.
And it's and it's to me, it's I'm just convinced this book is going to sell. I hope it's the early returns are good.
I also I have to say, you know, I'm very very fortunate we're doing well, and I have this not exactly tongue in the cheek, but you know how to we do well in the Midwest. Okay, but there's a lot of other people out there, so I appreciate the gentleman calling from California, and so it'd be loved, you know, it'd be great to get this book to get a life outside of the, you know, a 90-mile radius from my writing studio, as I jokingly say.
But within a 90-mile, if you could sell a book to every family within a 90,
that's true. You're absolutely right about that, and so in the fall, and as I said, in the fall and winter, I'll start taking on some more. You know, book talks and visits around our state. And I'm going to be doing a show in at the Milwaukee Rep, so I'll be in Milwaukee for a while, and I'll try and go north and south while I'm there, too.
Well, I tell you what, when you think about, all right, I'm going to write another book now, I hope you'll keep James Magnan.
I think he's the only reason I would write another book is, and I said, you know, he came on to the, not too late, but he comes on. It's quite a few chapters before he came in. And actually, in my writing, you know, he just kind of took the breath out of the room when he walked in. He's suddenly this vivid character. And I kind of fell in love with him. And so, and there's quite a few things that I can, you know, his past life, and I've got all this stuff that I can use it. So I've actually already started another book with him.
Oh, good, wonderful.
So I have to put it down for the summer, and then I'll pick it up again in the fall, and fingers crossed I can get that published.
Well, and when you do, you need to call me so that you can come talk with me on the air about it.
I absolutely will.
Thanks, Jim.
You're great. Thank you, Larry.
James DeVita is the author of A Winsome Murder, a murder mystery set in Wisconsin and Chicago. I much enjoyed reading his book, and I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy it as well. If you like mysteries, murder mysteries, that is, it's the book for you. And it's always nice to have a little Wisconsin connection. So I'm really glad he was able to be with us today to talk about it. Again, A Winsome Murder, go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We've got a link to it there. But if you go online, you're going to have no problem at all finding it, or go to your local bookstore. I always like to plug local bookstores if it's at all possible. If you got a local bookstore, go to the bookstore, ask for the book, and if they don't have it, they'll get one for you and just lickety split. Coming up next, so we talked about murder mystery first. Coming up next, another author of a book. This one is not fiction. It's a real life story, or series of stories about written by Heather Lendy, who has written a lot for a lot of different publications, including the newspaper in her own community where she writes obituaries. And it's a fascinating book, and so you better stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.